Hello and welcome to Truth News Radio Australia for another year. It's the 8th of January 2010. I've been off the air for a few weeks. I've actually had some problems with my internet connection. I was intending to continue to broadcast over that period, but my internet router went down and I had a few other problems, which only just got resolved today, actually. So there's been a big build-up of stories, and basically each day new information is coming in which kind of supersedes the information from the previous day, and it's frustrating. I'd really love to be able to do this show every day because then we'd be able to keep up with it. As it is, I'm trying to decide what to focus on here in this show, and I think despite a number of really important things I wanted to cover, a story that came up just today is probably going to lead for tonight's show. And this is a speech that was given by Barack Obama just today. And it is a very, very important speech from the point of view of understanding where we're headed internationally with the crackdown on human freedoms that we've seen building up over the years. And I'm going to play you that entire speech. I'll just give you a bit of background on it. Here from the ABC, the United States President Barack Obama says aviation security must stay one step ahead of a nimble adversary after a failed attempt to blow up a U.S. passenger plane on Christmas Day. In a speech at the White House, Mr. Obama announced that a security review in the wake of the failed terrorist attack had been completed. Mr. Obama admitted a systematic failure on the part of U.S. intelligence agencies in stopping the attack, but he said the buck stopped with him. Now, I want to clarify from my point of view what this really means, because when you hear the speech, you'll understand that everything he's saying is heralding a new wave of government control, government interference in your life, and government terror. And it's not just in the United States. It extends to Europe and the UK, and it will certainly extend to Australia. There's no doubt about it, although that hasn't been mentioned yet. I think if the measures that he's proposing go ahead, and it seems certain that they will go ahead, if that occurs, then the same measures will be adopted here. And one of the most egregious of which is, of course, the full-body scanners, which completely expose men, women, and children, but their naked bodies to security guards, and this is all completely controlled at the behest of government. And of course, other procedures have been announced through the recent speech, including an increased number of people to be put on the no-fly list, which, as we saw a couple of years ago, was already in a million. And we saw increased measures in terms of intelligence gathering. Well, what does that mean? I mean, we can only imagine what that means. We know what it's meant in the past. It's meant abductions. It's meant CIA abductions, renditions, torture, summary arrest, detainment without trial. We also see an increase in passenger profiling, which of course is going to single out people that are considered to be threats, and it's just another form of persecution. So what is really going on here? The underpants bomber was nothing. Nothing actually occurred on Christmas Day. The man was unable to detonate his explosives. But it's being drummed up and hyped up into this most extraordinary sort of pretext for bringing in a whole raft of new measures. And it's the oldest trick in the book. We've just seen it again and again. We've seen it so many times. And already they're announcing that polls have been done and people have said, oh, yes, I'd be quite happy to just surrender up my freedoms and for the sake of protecting me. People have been questioned about it at various airports and they're all quite keen to go ahead with it. Well, on this show and in the community of people who listen to this show, we're not going to go ahead with it. We're not happily going to surrender our freedoms for the sake of protection. And we need to make our voice heard. We just need to increase it. We need to amplify it. We need to do and brainstorm and think of all the possible things that we can do to let the world know that there is that there are people who do not accept these egregious assaults on our human rights. Well, I'm going to proceed now with the full press conference that was given by Obama just today. So please stand by.
Good afternoon, everybody. The immediate reviews that I ordered after the failed Christmas terrorist attack are now complete. I was just briefed on the findings and recommendations for reform, and I believe it's important that the American people understand the new steps that we're taking to prevent attacks and keep our country safe. This afternoon, my counterterrorism and homeland security advisor, John Brennan, will discuss his review into our terrorist watch list system, how our government failed to connect the dots in a way that would have prevented a known terrorist from boarding a plane for America, and the steps we're going to take to prevent that from happening again. Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano will discuss her review of aviation screening, technology, and procedures, how that terrorist boarded a plane with explosives that could have killed nearly 300 innocent people, and how we'll strengthen aviation security going forward. So today I want to just briefly summarize their conclusions and the steps that I've ordered to address them. In our ever-changing world, America's first line of defense is timely, accurate intelligence that is shared, integrated, analyzed, and acted upon quickly and effectively. That's what the intelligence reforms after the 9/11 attacks largely achieved. That's what our intelligence community does every day. But unfortunately, that's not what happened in the lead-up to Christmas Day. It's now clear that shortcomings occurred in three broad and compounding ways. First, although our intelligence community had learned a great deal about the al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen, called al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, that we knew that they sought to strike the United States and that they were recruiting operatives to do so, the intelligence community did not aggressively follow up on and prioritize particular streams of intelligence related to a possible attack against the homeland. Second, this contributed to a larger failure of analysis, a failure to connect the dots of intelligence that existed across our intelligence community and which together could have revealed that Abdul Muttalib was planning an attack. Third, this in turn fed into shortcomings in the watch listing system, which resulted in this person not being placed on the no-fly list, thereby allowing him to board that plane in Amsterdam for Detroit. In sum, the U.S. government had the information scattered throughout the system to potentially uncover this plot and disrupt the attack. Rather than a failure to collect or share intelligence, this was a failure to connect and understand the intelligence that we already had. And that's why we took swift action in the immediate days following Christmas, including reviewing and updating the terrorist watch list system and adding more individuals to the no-fly list, and directing our embassies and consulates to include current visa information in their warnings of individuals with terrorist or suspected terrorist ties. Today, I'm directing a series of additional corrective steps across multiple agencies. Broadly speaking, they fall into four areas. First, I'm directing that our intelligence community immediately begin assigning specific responsibility for investigating all leads on high-priority threats so that these leads are pursued and acted upon aggressively, not just most of the time, but all of the time. We must follow the leads that we get, and we must pursue them until plots are disrupted. And that means assigning clear lines of responsibility. Second, I'm directing that intelligence reports, especially those involving potential threats to the United States, be distributed more rapidly and more widely. We can't sit on information that could protect the American people. Third, I'm directing that we strengthen the analytical process, how our analysts process and integrate the intelligence that they receive. My Director of National Intelligence, Denny Blair, will take the lead in improving our day-to-day efforts. My Intelligence Advisory Board will examine the longer-term challenge of sifting through vast universes of intelligence and data in our information age. And finally, I'm ordering an immediate effort to strengthen the criteria used to add individuals to our terrorist watch lists, especially the no-fly list. We must do better in keeping dangerous people off airplanes while still facilitating air travel. So taken together, these reforms will improve the intelligence community's ability to collect, share, integrate, analyze, and act on intelligence swiftly and effectively.
I'm just going to pause it there. I just want to emphasize that the language that is being used here is, to the average person, almost opaque. You can't really grasp it, but you have to listen to each statement. And I do encourage listeners to rewind and play over some of those passages, because when you first listen to it, it sounds very innocuous, you know, very harmless almost. But then each measure has so much ambiguity in it that the question of what it will actually mean in terms of specifics hasn't been articulated, which means that all kinds of things can occur. And as we see with the actual measures that he's talking about, he wants to increase the number of people on the watch list and increase the number of people on the no-fly list. And he wants to have better intelligence. Okay, well, you know, that could be just total harmless. You know, someone sitting in an office with a computer, you know, studying stuff, you know, comparing bits of information. Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I don't think it's just ever going to be like that in the real world. It never has been. I mean, whenever there's a scare, whenever there's a hyped up threat, what actually happens is things happen on the ground. Things happen that affect people directly. So with this amount of hype, it would only be logical to assume that more people will be arrested, more people will be interrogated, more people will be surveilled, more covert operations will be conducted. I think you'd be a fool not to recognize that this must be the outcome of what the President of the United States is saying here. Anyway, I'll just continue.
In short, they will help our intelligence community do its job even better and protect American lives. But even the best intelligence can't identify in advance every individual who would do us harm. So we need the security at our airports, ports, and borders, and through our partnerships with other nations, to prevent terrorists from entering America. At the Amsterdam airport, Abdulmutallab was subjected to the same screening as other passengers. He was required to show his documents, including a valid U.S. visa. His carry-on bag was X-rayed. He passed through a metal detector. But a metal detector can't detect the kind of explosives that were sewn into his clothes. As Secretary Napolitano will explain, the screening technologies that might have detected these explosives are in use at the Amsterdam airport, but not at the specific checkpoints that he passed through. Indeed, most airports in the world and in the United States do not yet have these technologies. Now, there's no silver bullet to securing the thousands of flights into America each day, domestic and international. It will require significant investments in many areas. And that's why, even before the Christmas attack, we increased investments in homeland security and aviation security. This includes an additional $1 billion in new systems and technologies that we need to protect our airports. More baggage screening, more passenger screening, and more advanced explosive detection capabilities, including those that can improve our ability to detect the kind of explosive used on Christmas. These are major investments, and they'll make our skies safer and more secure. Now, as I announced this week, we've taken a whole range of steps to improve aviation screening and security since Christmas, including new rules for how we handle visas within the government and enhanced screening for passengers flying from or through certain countries. And today I'm directing that the Department of Homeland Security take additional steps, including strengthening our international partnerships to improve aviation screening and security around the world, greater use of the advanced explosive detection technologies that we already have, including imaging technology, and working aggressively in cooperation with the Department of Energy and our national labs to develop and deploy the next generation of screening technologies.
Okay, I just want to point out here that Obama is basically now being a salesman for specific technologies which have billion-dollar contracts associated with them. And he's making very direct references here to types of equipment that only a few companies produce. There is a massive financial benefit to certain parties from what he's proposing here. And conversely, there is a massive loss of quality of life to the average person from what he is proposing here. And oddly enough, this strange marriage of corporate profit and human misery, it's actually quite common. We've seen it over and over again. We've seen it in many periods of fascist and totalitarian systems. For example, during the lead up to the Holocaust, it's fairly well known that the computer company, IBM, was massively involved in the technology which allowed human beings to be identified and later rounded up. And, you know, there were great corporate profits being reaped at the same time as human misery was being inflicted. Of course, in most of the major wars, we've seen, you know, the companies that produce particular types of chemicals, such as, you know, Monsanto producing the defoliants. Monsanto made vast, vast profits from the aerial defoliation of North Vietnam. So, you know, don't be surprised. It's nothing unusual. It's business as usual, in fact.
Now, there is, of course, no foolproof solution. As we develop new screening technologies and procedures, our adversaries will seek new ways to evade them, as was shown by the Christmas attack. In the never-ending race to protect our country, we have to stay one step ahead of a nimble adversary. That's what these steps are designed to do. And we will continue to work with Congress to ensure that our intelligence, homeland security, and law enforcement communities have the resources they need to keep the American people safe. I ordered these two immediate reviews so that we could take immediate action to secure our country. But in the weeks and months ahead, we will continue a sustained and intensive effort of analysis and assessment so that we leave no stone unturned in seeking better ways to protect the American people. I have repeatedly made it clear, in public with the American people and in private with my national security team, that I will hold my staff, our agencies, and the people in them accountable when they fail to perform their responsibilities at the highest levels. Now, at this stage in the review process, it appears that this incident was not the fault of a single individual or organization, but rather a systemic failure across organizations and agencies. That's why, in addition to the corrective efforts that I've ordered, I've directed agency heads to establish internal accountability reviews and directed my national security staff to monitor their efforts. We will measure progress. And John Brennan will report back to me within 30 days and on a regular basis after that. All of these agencies and their leaders are responsible for implementing these reforms, and all will be held accountable if they don't. Moreover, I am less interested in passing out blame than I am in learning from and correcting these mistakes to make us safer. For ultimately, the buck stops with me.
All right, I'm just going to pause it there. I think you got the general flavor of that. I do encourage you to go to cspan.org, watch the entire piece, and analyze it, understand it, see where we're headed with this. There's a lot more information I need to bring you, so stand by.
Propaganda, disinformation, misinformation, deception, deceit, spin, untruths, half-truths, lies. You know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au.
Okay, well, the theme following from that piece, which was recorded today, which to my mind is most important, and I've noticed it's been quite dominant at prisonplanet.com, and a lot of people are talking about it, is of course the body scanners. Now, a lot of our stories have come through. For example, one that just came through today makes it quite clear that the body scanners produce very crisp images and actually allow you to, in fact, see, you know, genitalia. And I've got another piece I'm going to play here, which it's a video which is published at The Guardian. And we'll just quickly play some of this. I'll just read a quick passage here. The full body scanner on trial at Manchester Airport consists of two TARDIS-like blue boxes that passengers stand between and produces a ghostly naked image with curves and genitals eerily visible.
Yeah, when you're ready.
He's going to
turn the machine on.
One second.
We've been trialling the scanner for 6 weeks now. We've had about 500 of our customers go through the scanner. The majority of those people are telling us that they actually like it. They prefer it to the traditional methods of search that we've been using. It's less stressful and it's quicker. And, of course, it provides enhanced security. That's a given. We had a 75% acceptance rate before Christmas. After Christmas, the acceptance rate went up to 92%, which is good.
So there's a distinct change, was there, after the events of Christmas Day?
Yeah, there was a distinct change. It's kind of anecdotal feedback that we've got at this moment in time, but yes, there has been a distinct change. And only this week we've got people, when the trial's not been in operation, actually coming over and saying to us, is that the scanner? Can I have a look at it? Can I have a go in the scanner? Which is really interesting. If government decide that the scanners are the way forward and every airport in the UK has got to have the scanners, we've bagged between 16 and 19 of these scanners from Rapiscan, the manufacturer, and we can get these in really, really quickly, very quick turnaround. And of course, we've got a trial team here that have been using the scanner. We know how to operate it, so we're on the front foot.
Well, that was a representative of customer services at Manchester Airport in the UK, and as you can see, you know, they're quite excited about purchasing these wonderful new machines, and the company that makes them obviously is quite excited, and the passengers are all quite cheery about it because they've just had the bejesus scared out of them, and yeah, they basically will accept anything because because they want to be safe, yes. Well, this is the method by which humanity is oppressed. And I just have to keep saying it, and I'll just keep repeating it, show after show, tirelessly, monotonously. And I really hope that listeners to this show will spread that message equally. You have to actually make an effort to bring it up, because a lot of people shy away from it. They don't want to talk about it. You may, you know, in your workplace, you may have coworkers who you might mention it, and they might sort of giggle a little and then just sort of change the subject. Well, don't let them change the subject so quickly. Send them a link to one of these stories and bring it up. You know, bring it up at lunch, bring it up over a coffee. Make sure they know. Make sure that they don't just turn away and just sort of close their minds and pretend it's not happening. Just gently but persistently remind them and wake them up. Okay, we're going to move on now with a few more stories. And actually, in about 15 minutes, I'm going to be joined by Chris Toland from the who runs a show, co-hosts a show in Sydney on Radio Skid Row, the breakfast show. And we'll have a little talk with Chris about the show that he runs with his co-host Jack and what they've got planned for the rest of the year. So that'll be quite interesting. Now, I just want to run through some stories we've got here on the Truth News Twitter feed. Court backs war powers over rights of detainees. This is an incredibly important story. Really, this just came out in the last couple of days as well. A federal appeals court panel on Tuesday strongly backed the powers of the government to hold Guantanamo detainees and other non-citizens suspected of committing terrorist acts. In a sweeping opinion, a three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit found that the presidential war power to detain those suspected of terrorism is not limited, even if by international law of war. The decision, if it is not reversed by the Supreme Court, could apply to all cases involving detainees at Guantanamo Bay, since all of those cases are heard by the District of Columbia Circuit. As a result, the Obama administration will have a stronger position when opposing a court order to release a terrorism suspect. Now, this is a shocking development, because we've had a few years where it seemed like the pendulum was going the other way. It seemed like we were getting some sanity, some return to democratic norms, but that was the rhetoric. That was merely the superficial talk. That was what Obama continually talked about in the lead up to the elections, and continued to, you know, maintain as a face level position while we saw it all changing. But now the truth is coming through. Now the hard facts, the indisputable hard facts are coming through. And I think even the people who were numbed and brainwashed into supporting Obama must be beginning to realize the deception that took place here. I certainly hope so. Right. Now, I'm just going to quickly now cover the Peter Spencer hunger strike protest, which many of our listeners will be aware of, but I'll just give a quick recap here. Peter Spencer is a farmer whose land has been effectively seized by the government, not in the sense of, like, you know, sort of owning it, but in the sense of preventing him from using the land under the terms of the Kyoto Agreement. The government stands to gain something like $100 billion in carbon credits by declaring Peter Spencer and other farmers' land carbon sinks. And this carbon sink designation means that the farmer is effectively locked out of his own land. And Peter Spencer has been fighting this in court. He's made 200 appearances in court over the past several years. He's broke. He's threatened with losing his property. He declares that the government's position on this is unconstitutional. And at the very least, he is saying that the farmers need to be compensated. And he has a great deal of support from many, many farmers. And there's been quite a lot of news coverage of this in the last couple of weeks. But it seems now that the mainstream media spin machine has struck back after giving some reasonably sympathetic coverage to the subject. The The latest development is that the Australian has now published a piece which basically implies that Mr. Spencer has personal issues, that there are things in his background that make him questionable. And believe it or not, they put this on the front page of The Australian today, January 8, 2010, front page at the very top of the paper. And here's the headline from The Australian today. Family financial dispute helped send hunger striker Peter Spencer up the pole. A fairly humiliating and condescending headline to put on the front page at the very top of a broadsheet newspaper. The entire article is full of ad hominems, completely unsubstantiated claims, innuendos, and completely ignores the substantive case that Mr. Spencer is actually arguing. So I'll just read to you just a couple of lines from the article here. Serious doubts have emerged about the case of Peter Spencer, with the New South Wales farmer's family saying his 47-day hunger strike concerns more than land clearing. Graham Spencer, Peter Spencer's brother, criticised the politicians and reporters and activists who have turned his brother into a cause, saying they did not know the full story. Mr. Spencer's remarks are a swipe at, among others, National Senator Barnaby Joyce, who publicly took up Mr. Spencer's cause. Now, this disgruntled family member is having a go at Peter Spencer on a number of fronts. He's saying that, he borrowed some money from his family members. As far as I know, that's not a crime. And really, that was only because his livelihood was threatened and he was unable to make his land profitable. And obviously, if he borrowed money, what's that got to do with a substantive issue? They're turning that into a major issue in this story, the fact that he borrowed some money from his family. They then proceed to another story here that Mr. Spencer was engaged in some form of self-harm in 1970, a standoff between Mr. Spencer and the ACT police in August 1970. That's 40 years ago, 39 years ago. Right. I won't even bother reading the details there. It's basically, this is what's called just digging up dirt on someone. And it's completely irrelevant to the questions and to the cause that he is advocating. And I think it's just another perfectly good example, a really excellent example of what the media does in this country and in other countries. And with this article, and I'm sure these stories will then be repeated, we'll probably see them on the ABC, we'll see them in many different places, just as we did with Chappelle Corby, we'll see this man systematically destroyed through smear pieces, digging up things out of his background, completely out of context, and in many cases probably without any substantiation. And, we'll see late line pieces, we'll see 60 Minutes, we'll see Today Tonight, we'll see A Current Affair. And it'll be so easy because, they're so good at it. They're so practiced at this. Within a couple of weeks, the public opinion will have just mysteriously and miraculously turned away from supporting Peter Spencer. So again, I urge you very strongly to look into these articles, which we will post on the show notes from tonight's show.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with your hosts, Hereward Fenton and Joshua Jackson. You can subscribe to Truth News by going to truthnews.com.au and clicking the RSS feed, or using iTunes to catch the show every week.
Oh, my mama told me, cause she said she learned the hard way. Say she wanna spare the children. She say don't give a say your soul away, cause all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul. I was a pretty young girl once. I had dreams, I had high hopes. Married a man who stole my heart away. Gave his love, but what a high price to pay. And all that you have is your soul. Don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul. Why was I such a young fool? Thought I'd make history, making babies was the best I could do. Thought I made something could be mine forever. Another hard way, when can't possess another. And all that you have is your soul. Don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Is all that you have is your soul. I thought I could find a way. Be the system, make a deal and have no debts to pay. Take it all, I take it all, I'd run away. Leave myself first class and first rate. But all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul. Here I am, I'm waiting for a better day. A second chance, a little luck to come my way. Hope to dream, I hope that I can sleep again. Awake in a world with a clear conscience and clean hands. Cause all that you have is your soul. Don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul. Oh, my mama told me, cause she said she learned the hard way. Say she wanna spare the children. She say don't give a say your soul away, cause all that you have is your soul. All that you have. All that you have. All that you have. Is your soul.
Tracy Chapman there with All That You Have Is Your Soul. Okay, we're back, and I have with me tonight my good friend Christopher Tolland. Chris is an activist and also a radio host. Chris is a co-host of a great little radio show in Sydney called it's on Radio Skid Row, and the show is called
88.9 FM. That's right.
Welcome, Chris, to the show.
Great, Herod. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me this time.
Yeah, great to have you back aboard. As I was saying, Chris, you're a co-host of the show, The Breakfast Show. What number on the dial is that actually?
Yeah, it's 88.9 FM in Sydney, and okay. It gets quite a good range from North Sydney down to, I'd say, well, the high places. Yeah, Tempe,
okay.
Inner West. So North Sydney's quite good because it's high up there near Artarmon where that tower is, the high areas. But you can Excellent. Also get it on a radio stream download live at radioskidrow.org. That's the name of the radio station, 2RSR, which is radioskidrow.org for the live stream. And, yeah, so occasionally it has problems and it doesn't cooperate. And it seems to be when our good friend John Bursell has advertised all around the world to listen in.
You get inundated with people trying to get some truth, because your show is one of the few on the airwaves out there that basically cuts through all the crap, and you basically give people facts that they don't get anywhere else.
We try to, as best that we understand them. I think it's a tough thing, you know. You've always got to be discerning with the information and also be quite well-read and well-researched. Now, I know that you're very well-researched, Herod. I've listened to a few of your shows, for instance, the Sean Hatton interview about Chappelle Corby, and I think, oh, goodness.
Indeed.
But yeah,
indeed.
We do try to do it, keep it factual, and but also open people's eyes to a whole lot of things, from false flag terror as a primary one, because that's, I mean, 9/11 is so vast, it's so well documented, and that's a great one to start with, and that's like a turning point. If people can understand that something so big could have been planned by such audacious insiders, you know, and
indeed.
Audacity,
I would characterize Chris, as a truth activist on many fronts. I mean, you've been quite active in the 9/11 truth movement in Sydney,
yep.
And I mean, you're pretty up to speed with a lot of other issues as well.
Well, the issues that we talk about on the radio show a lot are the global warming hype and the global taxation, global government system, which is they're trying to sneak in.
Okay.
And we like to play David de Rothschild, the heir to the fortune. We've played his clip saying that how difficult it is to get a one world government, and that they've been trying it. Historically, it's very hard, and there's a lot of petty squabbling, and we just got to get the lower hanging fruit, as his quote said. Also, Ban Ki-moon talking about having a global government. These are things that are actually quoted in the mainstream media. And it's funny how it gets spinned in the mainstream media that we're all crazy and it's not happening at all, such as Kevin Rudd calling us all conspiracy theorists and doom mongers and naysayers and gloom and doom, you know, forecasters. But really, when you look at it, that's one of the topics. It is an attack on our individual and national sovereignty. And
well, this is what we cover on this show, you know, relentlessly. And I've, before you came on, I was running through some stories, which you know, just repeat the same themes. And with basically, the way I try to frame what we do here is that when you listen to the mainstream media, whether you like it or not, you are being subjected to relentless bombardment of monotonous and repetitive propaganda. And what we have to do with our shows is reverse that, because we equally have to be repetitive and monotonous in calling out the deceptions and dishonesty and spin that
is
being
right.
put into the media. And it's hard work and it's tiring, but we just have to do it.
I'll tell you what, my parents watch television and they're all, I mean, I talk to them about factual information. I tell them, for instance, that fluoride is a neurotoxin and it is rat poison. You know, when you go to the hardware, you buy it, sodium fluoride, it's rat poison. They don't believe it. Oh, if that was rat poison, I'd know about it off the telly, you know. And Dad, oh, gee. I mean, some people are just destined to believe authorities and believe the majority. And it's sadly that, yes, occasionally authorities lie, and the majority is probably not as well informed as they ought to be.
And so, and as I was mentioning earlier tonight, there is always, we see it over and over again, this fortuitous, comfortable partnerships between corporations and governments. Mm-hmm. Whenever it involves doing things that basically hurt us or make us miserable or steal our rights or take our property or just generally trample on us, what you find is that on the one hand, there's an arm of government making it happen. On the other hand, you find there's a corporation making a healthy profit out of the same thing.
So, and for instance, you mean such as the swine flu hysteria with I forget the name of the company, Donald Rumsfeld's little corporation.
Well, there's quite a few of them. The one that makes Tamiflu, and of course Baxter, and the few other companies that have made the swine flu vaccine. And there's been a scandal over that, which I probably should have covered in tonight's show, but I've just got way too much to talk about. But there's been a huge scandal over that, because it's now come out that I think they ordered 21 million vaccines for the swine flu, and only 5 million have been used. But we, the taxpayers, have footed the bill for that. That's already committed. The government is committed to buying those 21 million vaccinations. And, you know, that's just an outrage. I mean, it was totally unnecessary. We all knew that swine flu was totally overhyped. The flu count was lower than normal. But, I mean, the swine flu is just one of many. And earlier tonight I was talking about the body scanners. Because today, President Obama went, you know, before the people of the United States and the world to basically do an advertorial. Really, I'd call it an advertorial to promote this technology, because there's only a handful of companies that make it. And he's gone out there in front of millions of people and said, yes, and we're going to make sure that these particular pieces of technology get used in all our airports.
I think it's sickening. Yeah. I think, I mean, for people, I don't know, I'm pretty far removed from the TV reality of what, and I should keep my finger on the BS pulse, but... You know, it's a bit hard when it's so distasteful. I mean, I really should watch television a bit more than I do. But he is the spokesman of choice for this. You know, it's the new old order face. It's the Janus face. You know, it's always rotating. You know, throw out the old one, and it's the same creature. It's just a new face. You know.
Well, he has really shown his true colors now, Chris. He's come right out now and said, we are at war. He said that today. We are at war.
With whom? With what?
With Al-Qaeda.
Oh, my God. Like Robin Cook said, you know, that's just it's a media media catch-all phrase. It means nothing.
It's like saying you're at war with the boogeyman. I mean, this mysterious Al-Qaeda, which no one's ever seen, which has no organization, has no offices, it has no, you know, it's not in the phone book. It doesn't exist, okay?
It's Goldstein. Does Goldstein exist, Herowood? Does Goldstein exist?
Well, yeah.
Does Big Brother exist?
Yeah, the reference to 1984 there. Obviously, it's straight out of the playbook of 1984, where you create a completely fictitious, false enemy that you make the populace believe. And, you know, even some idiots, you can actually convince them to join this ludicrous organization. And then, of course, you set them up as patsies. You know, you've created this fake organization. You then lure disgruntled or mentally disturbed people into the fake organization that you've created, set them all up, put bombs on them that either don't work, or occasionally you set off a real bomb if you really want to kill some people and hype up the threat. But more often, you just set them up with faulty bombs that don't even go off. And then you say, aha, look what happened. Al-Qaeda, it's back, and it's terrible, and it's worse than ever.
I pray that people are waking up to the simplicity of the PSYOP. They've always got the underpants bomber, for instance, our new terror threat. Well, he gets on a plane and he sets his underpants on fire, and suddenly we've got to have body scanners now. I mean, how evident does this problem reaction solution have to become before people start waking up and going, golly gosh, you know, they've already got the solution waiting in the wings. Isn't that a bit coincidental? Don't you think? You know?
Somewhat. Yeah. Look, it's quite alarming.
Yeah, I found the Robin Cook quote about Al Qaeda.
Great.
He says, "Bin Laden was a product of monumental miscalculation by Western security agencies. Throughout the 80s, he was armed by the CIA and funded by the Saudis to wage jihad against the Russian occupation of Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda, literally the database, was originally a computer file of thousands of mujahideen who were recruited and trained with the help of the CIA to defeat the Russians. And that's what he said weeks, 4 weeks before his death in the Guardian newspaper in UK.
Great, so, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Look, I've got a few other issues I need to cover in tonight's show, and you may be able to comment on some of these because, I had an unfortunate experience earlier this week when I was actually changing a light bulb. Well, I wasn't changing it. It was one of those energy saver bulbs, and it started.
I can hear a truther joke coming here.
It's not a joke. It's real. I mean, it was flickering, and. I've been reminding myself to replace them. I just haven't got around to it. I'd like to get LED lighting, but I don't have it. And, of course, you can't buy incandescents anymore because the government decided for us that
is that so? That's not just New Zealand, is it? Is that Australia?
I'm pretty sure you can't buy them anymore. I may be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you can buy incandescent anymore.
Check it out when I go shopping. Goodness.
Now, one of my bulbs started flickering, and it was a bit annoying. So I tried to just... See, and I just adjusted it while it was still on, and it actually just I turned it off. It was off. I'd switched it off, but I tried to just adjust it a little to see if it was loose. And as I was turning it, it just shattered in my hand. Right. And I remember what I'd read about these bulbs containing mercury, and I was a little bit concerned, you know. I got the vacuum cleaner out and I vacuumed it up, which turns out was the absolutely wrong thing to do. Okay. Do not do what I did. Okay.
So that basically blasts the vacuum cleaner. All the vapor into the air and cycles it around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no. Okay. And I also touched the pieces with my hands. Again, no, no, no. You don't do that. You've got to wear rubber gloves. Okay. And you pick up the broken pieces with bits of sticky tape. And then you use damp cloth to mop up the area. Now, I found a site that details a list of things you actually need to do.
To epa.gov.hg?
Yeah, it's quite an amazing set of steps. And I'll just read to you some of the things that you actually need to do.
Okay.
Before cleanup, ventilate the room. Have people pets leave the room. And don't let anyone walk through the breakage area. Open a window and leave the room for 15 minutes or more. Shut off any air conditioning. A bit of a problem if you're in an office, isn't it? Imagine if
carefully
you're
scoop up the glass pieces and powder using stiff cardboard.
You've got the same page up, I see. Yes.
Just a quick search.
Yes.
Yeah. Use sticky tape and duct tape to pick up the remaining small glass fragments.
Yes, indeed, indeed.
This is like it's like disposing of a nuclear waste or something. It's a
It's really quite an amazing set of things you're meant to do. Now, what I find extraordinary about this, right, is that none of this information is prominent anywhere on anything on any of the packaging, right? And I'm sure most people have no idea about it. I'm absolutely certain. I mean, I spoke to some people today that I work with. No one had a clue, and. You know, it's one of these things I'd like to start doing with this show, start doing random polls, you know, get that out out there on the street, you know, just with a microphone and maybe just do a random poll to see if people know what the correct procedure is for dealing with a, you know, energy saver, wonderful low carbon footprint. Yay, save the planet light bulb.
What a lot of nonsense and rot that is. I think about the carbon footprint. I mean,
yeah,
if you don't mind, I'm upset that we have to use mercury. I know it's very toxic. And I know that it should not be put into anyone's body. And it's not just through fish. We can avoid it if we don't want to eat tuna from, I don't know, some polluted place. But, you know, mercury...
Mr. Poe of Texas.
Quest mission to...
Sorry about that. I just had a video up there. Sorry, please continue.
That's all right. I was just going to say that mercury is the... What did they say? It's the second most toxic chemical known to man. It's in the vaccines. I've had little discussions with people and they say, well, mercury's in fish, you know, and we always had mercury. I said, but they're injecting it directly into you with this thimerosal vaccines. So
mercury is a huge problem in our environment. It's coming from a number of different sources. And look, I've queued a video here, which is actually from the U.S. Congress just last year. And you can in this presentation by Representative Ted Poe, You can hear that this is factual information. This is not just something that we're overhyping here. So I'll just play some of this.
Can I just make the point?
Yeah, please, right? Please continue.
Just that Mercury, you know, it's not environmentally friendly. It's crazy. You know, they're saying that CO2 is toxic,
yeah,
but Mercury is the green enviro bulb. It's just so nonsensical. It is like, you know, up is down and black is white and freedom is slavery, and you know, it's so nonsensical. It is straight out of Orwell. That
no, this is absolutely right. I mean, they've brought in these measures, and I'm sure the government got some benefit from it again under Kyoto, and this is why they're so desperate to get this ETS through, right? Because by forcing the whole of Australia to move to these energy saver bulbs, there will have been some net reduction in Australia's carbon footprint, and there's all this money to be made out of this. I mean, it's actually profiteering on the back of these measures. And in this case, you know, polluting the environment with a known neurotoxin.
It's crazy.
It is.
We're living in a strange world, Harold. We live in very interesting times. But yeah, go ahead and cue that, play that thing. Yeah,
we'll just play some. We might stop it early. We'll just get it going here.
Oh, man.
Mr. Poe of Texas.
Request permission to address the House for 5 minutes.
The gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Congress passed an energy bill which should have been called the anti-American non-energy bill because it punishes Americans for using energy rather than finding new sources of affordable energy. But the bill does one thing, Madam Speaker. It controls the type of light bulbs that all Americans must use throughout our fruited plains. Congress's energy bill bans incandescent light bulbs by 2014 and requires Americans to buy compact fluorescent bulbs. Those are called CFLs. Now we can say goodbye to Thomas Edison's incandescent bulb and his invention. Madam Speaker, I have a constitution here, and like most members of Congress, I carry it with me. I've read it through and through, but I don't see anywhere in the U.S. Constitution that it gives the government the power to control the type of light bulbs used in Dimebox, Texas, or any other place in the United States. Besides the lack of constitutional authority, let me discuss these light bulbs further. Nothing in Congress seems to be easy, and that phrase is certainly true with these CFL light bulbs. These light bulbs contain mercury, so they have to be disposed of in a certain way. According to EPA rules, you're supposed to take them to a local recycling center. Thanks to Congress, nothing is easy. If you throw them out at home, you're supposed to seal the bulb in two plastic bags and place them in the outside trash. Otherwise, the bulb may break and pollute the landfill, of all things. CFLs are made of glass, so they're fragile. If one breaks it or drops it, you have to follow simple rules, thanks to Congress. And according to the EPA, here's what you do if you break one of these light bulbs. And I quote, have people and pets leave the room and don't let anyone walk through the area. We must evacuate the room, Madam Speaker. I continue. Open a window and leave the room for 15 minutes or more. Shut off the central heating and air conditioning system. Carefully scoop up glass fragments and powder using stiff paper or cardboard and place them in a glass jar with a metal lid. Obviously, that's readily available. I continue. Use sticky tape, such as duct tape, to pick up any remaining small glass fragments and powder. Of course, we do have lots of duct tape in Texas, so that's no problem. But we're not through yet. I continue to quote, wipe the area clean with a damp paper towel or disposable wet wipes and place them in the glass jar or plastic bag. Do not use a vacuum or a broom. And Madam Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to file this three-page single-spaced requirements the EPA has made all Americans follow in disposing one of these broken light bulbs.
Okay, without objection.
Thank you. If you break a light bulb in a high rise where the windows don't open, will the EPA light bulb police haul us off to jail because of improper disposal procedures? If I drop this light bulb, we would have to evacuate the House of Representatives, according to the EPA light bulb law. Have we gone a bit too far with this nonsense? Thanks to Congress, we're making what is simple very difficult. And besides, these light bulbs are expensive, and using them may fade photographs on the wall. Now, Madam Speaker, I'm going to carefully remove one of these light bulbs from a box that contains all these warnings on the outside. And this is one of those CFL light bulbs that Congress is requiring all Americans to use by 2014. There is more to the requirements of using these. It says here, and I quote, "These light bulbs may cause interference to radios, televisions, wireless telephones, and remote controls. Now we're in trouble for Monday night football because we're going to have to turn out the lights so there's no interference with our TV. We can also thank Congress for giving more money to China. This light bulb, it says right here, with all the warnings on it, is made in China. And Madam Speaker, they are only made in China." They're not-
okay, I'll just pause it there. You can listen to the whole thing. We'll put that on the show notes. Again, we see it again. I keep saying it over and over again. An amazing, you know, someone benefits, someone else suffers, right? Some companies operating in China and some corrupt officials making a fortune out of this, right? Someone's making an absolute killing out of this. It's fantastic for them, right?
Well, I remember back in the 80s, we had the phase out of the chlorofluorocarbons in the fridge as because of the hole in the ozone layer scare. And someone who makes a certain chemical for refrigeration did very well out of that. I think, it was Dow. I think Dow was the new sole producer of the new the hydro.
Dow Chemical. Okay.
Rather than the chlorofluorocarbons, there was a hydrocarbon now.
Okay, okay.
I think it was Dow. But yeah, once again, you know, they've made something illegal essentially and becoming, well, I have to do more research on it, but yeah.
Well, I think they've got a lot of blood on their hands. That name rings a bell. I'll have to do some research there, but I think they've been involved in some pretty bad chemical spills.
Now, yeah, I'd say so. But I've got here the savings to the environment. I'm on Australian Government Department of Environment, Water, Heritage and the Arts. environment.gov.au, and they're saying that they're going to be phased out from the 1st of February the regular incandescent general light bulbs, and they're saying that it's going to be so good for the environment and we're saving our environment and it's expected to result in the savings of the Australian economy of around $380 million per year by 2020. Now I want to say, if I have to spend half an hour or more doing all these safety procedures, that's wasting my time, and my time is my money. So I don't know if it's really a saving, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
And they're going to institute some recycling factory in every local town or something so you can get rid of the light bulbs. I think it's nonsense. And also the whole, another thing, this is a corollary point, is that they're calling it the carbon footprint, you know, the whole hoo-ha about the carbon footprint, which, you know, I mean, that's a whole other topic, you know.
The whole thing is a furphy. The whole thing it's an agenda. It's a shabby trick. It's using an environmental threat to bring in an agenda, which is a corporate scam. And at the same time, it's harming people. You see, I wouldn't mind so much if it was harmless. But these things always harm people. And that's what I just have to put, the buck has to stop there. You know, I have to put my foot down and say, well, no, sorry. You can't just rip us off and poison us at the same time, you know. I'm not going to tolerate that. And we need to see so much more effort. We've got to get the people in this country awake, Chris, because the problem is they're too somnolent. They're just drifting along, and even the ones who know what's going on aren't active enough. Because we saw, you were down there at Martin Place for the Walk Against Warming. I mean, there were thousands and thousands of these activists down there who've been primed by this CO2 religion. And,
I wouldn't say 1,000, maybe 1,000 at a big estimate, I'd say.
Okay, yeah, I think it was overhyped. I think they said there was more than that, but I think you're right. I think it was maybe not much over 1,000. But still, we need to be able to get 1,000 people. We need to be able to do that. If we can't get 1,000 people out, we are going to lose on every front.
Yeah,
and at the moment, we're pushing it to get 10 people to come out. So we've got a big problem. Like and when I say we, I mean those of us who know what's going on, because we don't have a movement of people who are getting out and willing to face the cameras and get out on the street and, you know, wear a T-shirt and, you know, make some noise. Because that in itself won't fix it, but it's a first step. You've got to do that. You've got to be prepared to do that.
It's a long period of conditioning which two or three generations have undertaken to sort of arrive at this sort of, you know, what do you say? I forget the word, somnolent, or the living asleep.
Sleepwalking mode, yeah.
Yeah, the zombie mode. You go to work and you do your job and you go home and you watch TV and drink beer and that's life.
Yeah.
So I think it's a long process of conditioning, and also I posit that fluoride has a great deal to do with a lot of people's apathy.
Well, there's fluoride and many other contaminants in our environment, which certainly I would agree. And mercury, again, you know, in our teeth and in our food and various things like that, affecting our overall health. I'm just wondering, Chris, can you just give us a quick, because we've only got a few more minutes, but just give us a quick idea of what you're going to be covering on your show. And who are the other presenters on this show? We've got Jack.
Okay, I'll tell you about that. On the show, there's Jack Frost. He's Jack the Frost, regular, that's right. He's the DJ, the guy behind the desk who runs it. Yeah. I met Jack just last year when I was doing a street action, and he introduced me to the show. He gets the media clips like Bill Hicks and George Carlin, and we play a lot of sort of subversive comedy. And also we have regular interviews. At 7:15 is our regular interview slot. I was in awe and I was very nervous. I had John Hutchison, the amazing. He's an experimenter and a tinker with matter and energy and a whole lot of very exotic things. We had John Hutchison on. We're going to have him on again, hopefully. We might have Bob Carter on from the Climate Skeptics Outfit. He's a lecturer ecology and climate from James Cook University. We're going to have a whole lot of people. It starts again this Monday. Getting back into it at 6 o'clock, we'll be there.
Okay.
Generally, I'll tell you the basic rundown of the show. We have 10 minutes or maybe 5 minutes of chat, then a couple of songs, and we go through the headlines and we break it down from a sort of from a different perspective to the regular news. We take a critical look at news media, but we also have Claire Cat Complex. She's an interesting person. She goes on a whole lot of things which I'm not really enamored with, such as feminism and sexism. And I think, for me, that smacks of divisive New World Order conquering, divide and conquer.
Okay, yeah.
So it's really, it gets a bit antagonistic between myself and her, because she's pushing a different barrow to what I am. But she does
that
talk about
must
community
add to
issues.
Add to the excitement of the show at times.
It gets a bit tense, that's for sure. Yeah. But I take the view that anything which is divisive and it's just helping the New World Order, we should be focusing on attacking that eye on top of the pyramid rather than, setting man against woman and black against white and so forth, And she speaks about atheism and how atheism is the true thing. And I posit that you can't know whether there's God or not. It's belief either way. Whether you believe there is or believe there's not, it's still belief.
Okay, but, that's interesting.
We have conceptual difficulties on that point. But
we've tried to stay away from those kind of questions on this show, because you could spend the rest of your life arguing those topics and never get anywhere.
What I say is, you can't tell me that there's no God. You have to be dead to find out. Full stop, end of conversation. It's belief. It's not knowledge, so don't mix it up. I say often, don't believe anything. So don't ever say, I don't believe that. Say, I don't know that. Because you can probably find out. And you could probably seek to find out. But, belief is for the realms of things you can never know. And I don't mind religion. I don't mind atheism. But I don't like either of them saying, I know this categorically. So anyway, that's my beef. But I'm getting a bit emotional. Not emotional.
I think I'm pretty much on your side of the equation there.
That's what we do. That's Kat, that's Jack, and myself. Jack and I are more on the same page about there is a new world order and false flag terror is a real thing. And, eugenics is not for the improvement of society always. It's about the controlling of society, such as making us stupid and lazy and apathetic and complacent. That's modern eugenics. As from Bertrand Russell and George Bernard
Certainly
Shaw
a lot of that
and
about, yes.
Fabian group. And we talk about a whole lot of stuff. Fluoride in the water, fake global warming hype. We try not to we don't get into eugenics too often because it's such a vast topic.
Well, and it goes back many, many decades.
I like to stick with what you called vanilla truth.
Indeed, indeed. You know, look, we're gonna have to wind up shortly, Chris. But look, I'm actually looking forward to coming on your show at some point as a guest, and you know, having a chat about all this, and you know, we can talk about some similar topics, and maybe exchange, you know, talk, do interviews with each other, and
definitely
get the information out.
I think Lord Monckton coming is going to be something quite big. We're hoping that, I hope that something can be organised. I'm not very organisationally minded, and I'm not very good at corralling people together. But the Monckton visit has the potential to be quite, impactful.
I'm looking forward to that, and you know, we're gonna make the most of that, because it's gonna give us a chance. It's gonna give exposure to a whole lot of other stuff, because you know, as we've seen, global warming skepticism is the thin end of a lot of stuff, a lot of questioning, and it's one of the most prominent aspects of what I would call a truth movement, if I were to use that phrase, you know, if I were to say there is a truth movement. But it's odd, because there isn't really a truth movement. There is just many different movements and many different people who have seen through many different lies and deceptions. But what I feel our role is to show those connections, and hopefully, because I'd like there to be a movement where people could understand, the ones who are questioning CO2 could start to understand the problems with the war on terror, and to see the underlying control paradigm in both.
The fiat money system. I spend a lot of time talking about the controllers of the money system, and people say that, well, yeah, you're right. There is a whole raft of issues that hopefully they are interconnected, definitely. And,
yeah, we want to start drawing those connections.
Yep.
Well, look, we're gonna have to wrap up.
Certainly.
It's been a fantastic night. Our first show back today.
Can I just mention the address?
Yeah,
and
give us those websites again. That'd be great.
So, that's Crispy T from Skid Row, 2RSR, 88.9 FM on the Sydney band, 88.9 FM. Also, if you want to stream any place in the world, radioskidrow.org. And if you're on Facebook, join Jack and Friends, Skid Row Breakfast Radio, Jack and Friends Skid Row Breakfast Radio. So, and yeah, join into that, and and listen to us online. So
looking forward to it. And our audience, I hope you got that. And really, if you haven't had a chance, do listen to it. It is really fantastic.
And please call at the end of your show, Herod. Ask them to come out and get involved. This is key.
Yeah.
Key to making a change is becoming involved and being the change you want to see.
Yeah, so, we're going to keep repeating that over and over again this year. We're going to just relentlessly, and we're going to make you feel guilty if you don't. Okay, so.
I hope so.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks very much, Chris. Thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me, Herod. Have a good night.
Yeah, bye. You too. Thanks. Bye. Okay, well, that about wraps it up for tonight. And, we'll be back very soon. I'm hoping to do another show within a week, and we want to keep rolling the shows out, and we want to have some really good people come on the show as guests, and I'm currently lining some of that up. So please visit truthnews.com.au frequently and leave some comments. Send me an email if you've got a suggestion. Really look forward to it. Thanks from me, Herod Fenton, and I'll be talking to you again very soon. Good night.